This meeting is now being recorded.
Good afternoon and welcome to the first meeting of the new year for the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. This is Lori Earle. I'm the chair of the committee. I'm from the Sacramento Court. Before we get to we are going to take roll. Judge, start. I'm just going to go alphabetically. Judge Boris.
Here.
Alan Carlson.
Here.
Sherry Carter.
Here.
Jake Chatters.
Here.
Judge Cope.
Here.
Judge Conklin.
Here.
Judge DeSantos.
Here.
Richard Feldstein.
Here.
Rebecca Fleming.
Here.
Kimberly Flenner.
Here.
Judge Gall.
Here.
Judge Good.
Here.
Jose Guillen.
Here.
Judge Harmon.
Here.
Judge Holland.
Here.
Judge Johnson.
Here.
Judge Kuehl.
Here.
Sean Landry.
Here.
Judge Lee.
Here.
Judge Maragonda.
Here.
Stephen Nash.
Here.
Deborah Norrie.
Here.
Michael Roddy.
Here.
Judge Slough.
Present.
Judge Smith.
Here.
Mary Beth Todd.
Here.
Kim Turner.
Here.
Christina Volkers.
Here.
David Yamasaki.
Here.
And our advisory members, Kurt Child.
He's here.
Jody Patel is not with us today. Kurt Soderlund.
Here.
Zlatko Theodorovich.
Here.
And we also have the administrative director, Martin Hashina, here today as well. Well, again, welcome to the first meeting. It's good to see everyone in the new year. And this is we have new members to our committee. You may recall that there was a, since we converted to an advisory committee last summer, or was it December? Anyway, this is a, there was a nomination period for both CEOs and presiding judges, so we have some returning members. Thank you for coming back, and we have some new members, so thank you for joining us. The first item on our agenda is to approve the minutes from our December 9th, 2014 meeting. The minutes are attached to the materials. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Yeah, David Yamasaki moves.
And a second?
Tom Morris.
Any discussion on the minutes? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. If any of the committee members needs a copy of the materials for today's meeting, raise your hand. We'll make sure you have them. They were sent out and posted, but we also have copies here. The next, so our first agenda item is an update on the governor's budget proposal for 2015 and 16. We will hear from Kurt Soderlund, who's the chief administrative officer for the Judicial Council, Zlatko Theodorovich, who's the director of the finance office, as well as Corey Jasperson, who's the director of Office of Governmental Affairs, and I would also invite Mr. Hashina to participate as well.
Thank you. Hopefully many of you were able to participate. This is Zlatko Theodorovich. Participate on the phone calls that we had last week. It was last week already, right? When we presented the budget, that was released by the governor on Friday, but I still think it's important that we go through the items just so that there's an opportunity for questions, because on that call there wasn't an opportunity for questions. It was just a one-way discussion, and given that it impacts our work so importantly, we need to make sure that we have a sort of get a sense of what you think about the budget, and that might influence our advocacy as we go forward. So the first important aspect of the budget is the 5% trial court reinvestment. This is the second year of that 5% as indicated by the administration last May. So between the $90.1 million, the $86.3 million, and the $60 million that was in the 13-14 budget, trial court reinvestment has been $236 million. Still, looking for more resources, but that's that's a good start. Obviously, we still have issues in terms of managing the reductions that have been put upon the trust funds in prior years, and still have challenges going forward managing because of the 1% and that issue. There was $42.7 million for trial court benefits, of which $10.8 million of that represents a partial return of the $22 million that was taken as part of the proposal last May revision that the administration put forward. We had $64 million worth of costs, and we were only approved $42 million, with this $22 million as an issue of encouraging the trial court to re-examine their retirement payment relationship with employees, and given the changes that have been made by a number of the trial courts, $10.8 million is being returned. We had a discussion yesterday with a small group about how to manage but allocate those, and we'll be bringing that forward at another budget advisory committee meeting. We have already made some progress on coming up with potential allocation methodologies there. Next is, it was, an important investment by the administration of $26.9 million related to Prop 47 implementation. As you know, that passed in early November, and I think we were at a PJ meeting and started to have that conversation just prior to the passage of that, and initiated discussions with the Department of Finance, and had to pull together a quick estimate, and staff were doing their best working with the trial court staff to sort of verify that, and luckily the Department of Finance saw fit to put a pretty big investment over 2 years in the branch's budget, the 26.9, and reducing down to 7.6. There was a three-year sort of cost, and they sliced and diced it over the course of two fiscal years. But what's important is the commitment of the investment. We will continue to work on the actual cost as we're, do have a survey out and looking to sort of really determine what the workload impacts are, because there are aspects that didn't include some of the workload with folks coming in for their records to be reviewed and changed. So that is an initial investment, and we're thankful for that, certainly, given that it is impacting folks. Yes, Stephen, Nash.
So is that limited term funding, or is that a permanent base?
It's a limited term because they want to assess the workload on an ongoing basis, because there is this issue and discussion about, and I think it was discussed this morning a little bit, was the fact that there's going to be a different mix of cases coming forward, what the felony caseload will look like and the misdemeanor caseload will look like. We also have to assess then, will the length and complexity of misdemeanor filings change? And so there are going to be implications as we do this next update to RAS, how that will impact sort of the cost going forward. And so it's a two-year limited term funding at this point, but not something that we're stopping, saying that's the end of the discussion. It's going to be an ongoing discussion with the Department of in the legislature, given that this is going to have an ongoing impact on the trial courts. All right. And we will, on this particular case, we'll look to developing a group to take on the work of the criminal realignment, criminal justice realignment work that was done on the AB 109 money. We need to constitute a group that's going to look at how to distribute these funds out to the trial courts in 15, 16, and 16, 17. Next is an important issue related to the revenue backfill for the trial court trust fund. As you know, we submitted a finance letter last year for support of the trial court trust fund. We had reduced revenues in our civil filings, first paper filing fees, and they only provided, the Department of Finance and the legislature provided only $30.9 million of those resources needed. We'd indicated that we'd be coming back to them for the unfunded portion, the $22.7 million that many of you are familiar with. There was the gap that was not funded by the administration in the budget. So we did submit that $22.7 million request. But also in an evaluation of our current year revenue projections, we saw that there was some continuing declines in our revenues. And I think in our last meeting in November, for those of you that were here, we talked about an initial projection of $11 million shortfall in the trial court trust fund in the current year, and translating that to $19.8 million in the budget year. The budget provides the $19.8 million in the budget year, but it does not speak to providing us any resources for our current year estimate of $11 million. And so we are concerned, and we've been discussing that at length with the Department of Finance, given their comments at conference committee last year about providing stable resources for the Tropcore Trust Fund going forward. They had already not approved the 22.7, and the budget does not reflect that, notwithstanding our request. But we are concerned and looking to work with the administration on an ongoing basis about this revenue instability and ensuring that we don't have to look for current year allocation reductions. The good news is that since that $11 million projection was done in October, revenues have improved slightly, and so it's now down to about $4 million is our current year estimate. And I think in the presentation that we'll get from Stephen Chang later, we may have savings. Hopefully there will be sufficient savings in other areas of Tropcore Trust Fund expenditures that could possibly address that so that there won't be any impacts on any allocations. But, again, we're here mid-year through the fiscal year. We're at about $4 million. $4 million on $1.5 billion of revenues is fairly marginal, but it's still, when we have no fund balance, every dollar on the negative is something we have to manage, and we don't want to create a problem for the trial courts in the current year. So any questions about the technicalities of the revenue shortfall and where we stand? No additional resources in the current year. They continued to 30.9 and added then 19.8 for an almost $50 million revenue backfill as of 15-16.
So the current year poll, you talked about the 22.7, they did not adjust it at this point. When we look to the out year, then, is that a continuing hole?
Yes, they did not yet. So that's not been addressed. So the 22 is ongoing. The $30 million, $31 million that they provided, they continue that. And then the hole is worse projected, and they provided the additional sort of gap that is being generated, which is $19.8 million. 22.7 they did not address at all, but they did address the future projected decline in 15-16, which is we've estimated at 19.8. Next is related to the IMF, and it has implications for the Tropcore Trust Fund. The Improvement and Modernization Fund has been providing approximately $20 million of revenues to the Tropcore Trust Fund. In part of our work at this body and at the recommendation of the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee last year, recommended that transfer no longer continue and that the $20 million be retained in the Improvement and Modernization Fund to help it. And that only makes the hole smaller, but there's still a hole in the Improvement and Modernization Fund. Along with the $20 million of revenues being retained, there's a little over $6 million of expenses that will then move along with it. So there's a $13 million reduction in revenues to the TCTF. We knew then at the time that we were making this recommendation to the Council and ultimately the BCP to the Department of Finance that would have implications on trial court allocations. That we would have to reduce trial court allocations by that gap in revenues that we're now being faced in the trial court trust fund. So that was part of the, in order to try and stave off more reductions in the improvement fund, we're going to have some marginal reductions in trial court trust fund allocations. But the hope is that through, if the revenues turn around or we have some additional fund balance, at the end of this fiscal year, that we could, on a one-time basis, help mitigate some of that $14 million reduction on the allocations if there's some additional savings on a one-time basis in the Tropcore Trust Fund. I know it's all very complicated and there's lots of moving parts, but that's the sort of the interplay of the two funds, especially when monies were going from one fund into the other, and now both funds are depleted. And if you try to help one fund, you're going to hurt the other. And that was the decision and the discussion that was had at the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee when they made the recommendation to this body that then forwarded that to the Council, which resulted in the BCP that we submitted. That got approved in the Governor's budget.
Judge Good, did you have a question?
I'm just trying to figure out the net effect
of what you're saying, Zlatko, if there's a $13 million hit to the trial court trust fund because of the net of what's going on with the IMF, and there's a 22.7 ongoing hit to the TCTF, that's 35.7. Should we net that 35.7 against the $90 million increase, or meaning we get a $55 million increase, or am I reading that wrong?
I think that is a discussion that we'll have to have as we go through this spring. I'm not going to sit here. I think that's part of what the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee will be looking in terms of those options. Or was it the funding methodology? I'm trying to remember which one dealt with the reductions. But this body will deal with that, and we'll develop a recommendation to take to the council. But we will discuss the interplay of all of those most definitely.
But it's fair to offset both those numbers, 13 and the 22.7 against the 90, to figure out what we really have to work with.
From a net, I mean, yeah, I mean, the 22 is a continuation, whereas the 13 million would be new.
Ms. Turner has a question.
Thank you, Judge Earl. So I'm a returning member of this committee, and it's been a few years since I've been on, so I'm sorry if I'm still catching up a little bit. But my understanding was that the IMF, the statute provides how much money is sort of put into the IMF fund, and I know that in the years when the IMF fund was carrying a large fund balance, the decision was made to move money into the TCTF, and that makes perfect sense. Now that both funds are depleted, is the goal now to leave the money that comes into the IMF pretty much in the IMF and stop transferring money out of it to go to the other fund? Because it looks like the revenues are still short of the expenditures in the IMF, and that's a discussion that the committee is going to have, correct?
Right. The issue is the most recent transfer from the IMF to the TCTF was this $20 million. There was a historic one earlier when budget reductions were happening, I think in 8-9, that now currently nets to a $13 million movement from the IMF to the TCTF. But we're only talking about the $20 million most recent change.
Okay.
And while that will help, it doesn't cover the whole. And when we get to the discussion later on, we still have about a $10 to $13 million shortfall that the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee will have to deal with and bring forward to this body and ultimately to the council as to what will be the plan to deal with that shortfall.
Thank you.
All right. Next is are the fee increase elimination of the sunset. That was an important issue for us, as you know. In order to manage some of the general fund budget reductions, fees have been increased. And they were, as they were passed by the legislature, sunsets were put on them, 2-3 year sunsets, for the purpose, I think, of being able to reevaluate the circumstance of the budget and to see whether or not those are things that could be eliminated and the fees could go back down. Well, as the case may be, is that we're not getting the kind of support to undo the fees, and so the proposal, I think this was something the council had adopted as one of its legislative priorities, was to seek some action on the fee increases. Well, the administration is proposing that $37 million of fee revenue that was initiated in the 2012 Budget Act, they're proposing to eliminate the sunset. We shall see where that lands in terms of final budget negotiations, but that's their proposal at this point, which is at least consistent with ours as far as continuing those revenues when they would be expiring at June 30th of 2015. Any questions about those revenues? Yes, Jose.
Yes, Jose again. Is the $37 million projected for 15-16?
Yeah, we assume that already in our revenues, assuming that would be something that the Department of Finance was going to continue for us. Next, in order to fund the already increased judicial officer salaries, there's $10.3 million, which a little over $9 million of that is going towards trial court judges, and that's consistent with 68203 government code, which provides for an increase based on the average increase of state employees. There is a 2% COLA proposed by the Department of Finance for the state-level judiciary of $4.6 million. That's not something that's apparent in the detail of the budget for the branch. Technically, it's shown in another part of the budget, but we wanted to ensure that everybody was aware of that, since it's not something that you would see in any of the budget detail in the branches section. The Department of Finance, as you will see in the materials, specifically addressed the issue of court-appointed dependency counsel, not in any change to the funding level, but a commitment to examine it and work with the branch to look at the data and allocation methodologies. And while there's no new money, they chose to put in some budget bill language that, for the purposes of maybe some greater transparency, identifying for the public at large that there's $103.7 million available to support court-appointed dependency counsel. Yes, Sherry.
And I think this is a good time to solicit volunteers, because I chair that subcommittee and noticed not one person signed up. So I would encourage you to sign up. Thank you.
For the court-appointed dependency counsel methodology. And maybe when we talk about it at the end of the meeting, there might be others who, after we hear the discussion about the mid-year process and that sort of thing, might be interested to join us. Next significant issue that is not a budget dollar issue, but it impacts our operations in so much as the administration is proposing a traffic amnesty program. But they're proposing it to be 18 months rather than the 6 months that was done in 2011. This is, in essence, there is revenues from penalties are going down, or had been going down, in part maybe because there's just fewer tickets being written. I'm not sure whether collections has been significantly impacted. But there are funds at the state level that receive revenues from the state penalty fund, which then receives, penalty resources. And there are two operations in particular that they're concerned about. One is for the peace officer standards and training, that they provide reimbursement to local law enforcement to go to post-training so that they can be certified for that purpose. And then there's another entity, the Board of State Communities Corrections, that provides training for staff who work in jails. They also get reimbursements. And so their expectation is that $12 million will be generated over this 18 months that are put directly into those two funds. We asked the Department of Finance how they generated that $12 million estimate, and they're saying that they believe that there's $150 million of eligible delinquent debt that could be collected, and then that trickles down to, like I think they said, 7 or 8% of those collections would ultimately find their way into this particular fund, but all other funds would receive the revenues per statute and per distribution. So, I mean, that is their proposal to assist those two budget areas, but they obviously have a direct impact on our operations, notwithstanding the cost recovery ability that we have for a traffic amnesty program. Yes, sir.
Do we have numbers from the 2011-12 amnesty, what we collected and what it cost us to do that?
Well, after costs were recovered, I think we were at total for all distributions of $12 million. So the belief is that there are those types of resources out there, and they're hopeful that we can generate that kind of revenue for this proposal. All right. Next would be a construction program. There are 12 projects that are funded at $174 million. And I won't go through them there in the memo. We did identify the phase. So if you have questions about the projects, I don't know to what extent there were changes from what was submitted by the council to the Department of Finance. But again, $174 million. The memo describes, some major investment areas that the administration is looking at. Water, flood protection. Climate change continues to be a priority of the administration with the Prop 1. Obviously, water bonds are going to be put out there quickly to get projects rolling. Governor is very interested in strengthening the rainy day fund, not at all interested in the boom and bust that he saw his predecessors had with good times, bad times, so not really interested in sort of having that up and down roller coaster type approach on state programs. Paying off debt, obviously a big increase in K-12 education of almost $4 billion. A lot of investment in education there, and it kind of crosses over in terms of additional resources to CSU and UCs, investments in workforce training of $1.2 billion for adult education, additional costs in state Medi-Cal, and then a concern of the governor, but no funds identified quite yet, but at least a recognition of putting it on the radar of retiree health care and what might be done with collective bargaining going forward. It was an identification of the problem, but not any resources to deal with that problem as of yet. We also wanted to identify to you, for you, obviously, that unfortunately no change to the 1% fund balance policy. Continue to have conversations and advocacy for that with the Department of Finance. No new judgeships and no new technology investment. But what we did hear from the Department of Finance is that they are aware and are concerned and interested in modernizing the branch. That at this point, they were just not ready to provide us any resources, say, for the LAN-WAN, local area network, wide area network request that we put into them. But we're hopeful that we can get them to put in some money for our technology needs because a modern branch is an efficient branch that can better deal with the resources that we have. Yes?
Did they express what their hesitancy was?
At the time, they said it was just a concern about general fund resources. So it wasn't necessarily an outright concern about the needs, which is good. But that at the time that they were making their budgetary decisions, that the resources were just not there in light of the 90 and the 42 and the 27. I think they had seen that they might have kind of reached their limit for this process, but we're hopeful in the spring process that we'll continue to pursue that, and that maybe in April or in the May revision that they do provide us the resources for some technology investment.
Conceptually, pardon me, they had no problems with it at all. I had further discussions with them. And they're not arguing the merit of the proposal.
So those are the highlights, the issues of the budget. Please, I need to ask questions. Obviously, next steps are something that are being discussed. Martin and Corey and folks are talking about what is the advocacy as we go through the spring with both the administration continuing and the legislature and our stakeholders. Yes, Kay Turner.
So will the Judicial Council be looking for this committee to give a recommendation on whether to oppose or support that amnesty program? Or do we know whether this committee will have a role in those discussions and making recommendations?
Is it too early to tell?
I think it's too early to tell. I think that conversation is generated by the Chief Justice and her desire to support that recommendation.
I realize it's all new information, but I didn't know if that was something that would typically come through this avenue. Unknown.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
If you all have an opinion about it, I'm sure that folks would like to hear it, but we're waiting to hear what the Chief Justice's position is on that.
Great.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'd like to say more, but it's Martin Hushino. I really don't know enough about the issue to provide any kind of advice to you all here or to the chief for that matter on this issue. I did detect that there seemed to be a fair amount of skepticism that might be grounded in some of your prior experience on this particular subject a couple of years ago. So, that at least informed me. I did get that impression. So there's obviously some conversation to have about that internally to find out where we are on that. And as I sit here, I don't either fully understand what the administration or finance's logic or what it's on to, but it's certainly an issue that we should join and figure out, because I could tell that there seems to be some concern about the amount of effort it takes for what the actual return on this will be. And we just should be, I think, really honest and transparent about what we think is there and how much is there and what we can and cannot do for the long way.
Thank you.
I thought I heard you say that, was it $12 million was recovered in the land amnesty program? Yes. Do we determine how much it cost us to cover the $12 million?
I think that there was like a couple of million dollars that were deducted.
The cost of the program was estimated about $2.7 million, with the net being around $12 million.
Yeah, if I could continue a little bit, just for my small portion on the budget of it, obviously we have what I had referred to on the phone previously as round one. We've got something out of the administration where they are. Round two, we will turn our attention to the legislative piece of this. And round three is obviously what they put back on the governor's desk at the end of the day. So we will work through all of that closely with everybody. The round four, which is really just the return to round one, in my view, is getting ready at the same time for the January 2016 budget. To some extent, my mind has already gone down that track. I've had the privilege of already talking to a number of folks along the line. And so some of the elements we see in the budget are good, they're better, but they're still not where we want to be. And we want to spend some time at the same time simultaneously advocating for what is there for us and simultaneously setting the stage for what's better. And it seems to me that some of the challenges and the difficulty of the conversation that just happened about child court trust fund and IMF and how does that connect with the actual dollars that are in there, you know, ought to get more clarity, and we ought to try and get to a place where we get a lot of people to understand that whatever the funding formula is for the branch isn't really as good as it can be. We've shifted more off of reliance on the general fund, shifted to this other stuff, and it's still not where it needs to be, and maybe there needs to be a mix. And so going forward, setting a foundation for what is that mix? And so some of the things that are there for us to talk about with folks are what would be a smarter, better, more helpful operating reserve for the branch? So what does that look like, and what does that mean? How do we adjust trial court funding things along the way? And this is some of the logic on why the whys and wherefores of why the budgets are put together the way it is. This is why some of the Prop 47 money is front-loaded. Look at the dollars on how it is. This does not make it worse. This is why you see the extension of the fee increases, and not just an extension, but permanently is the proposal to put that in, because there's a bigger discussion to be had about a more stable and more sustainable funding formula. And so while we want to advocate at the same time, because this is a step in the right direction and gets us healthier operationally, it's still not the level of health that we think we need to operate at. So that's really the work, some of the work to do. And that's, if you see tea leaves or you try to read some of the logic that is in the approach of why it's wired the way that it's wired, we're trying to set the stage for a more broader discussion about what it should look like if we get moving to a place that, sure, changes were made and we end up with this particular formula, but can anybody really feel comfortable that that's the formula that they want? It's an incredibly difficult thing to manage each of your operations during the course of the year if the amount of money you have available is moving around on you on a monthly or a quarterly basis, however it is that you're making your operational decisions. And so there's really no way to do it. There's always going to be some fluctuation, but if we can get the fluctuation at a more reasonable boundary, I think that makes every presiding judge and every CEO in the state feel a little bit better and a little bit more confident about the decisions that they're making when they're making them during the course of the year.
Thank you. Judge Good.
Has it been decided whether we are going to advocate for more money this year, or are we going to accept this level of funding?
Yeah, so I think the way I tried to frame it in that way, I think the short version of the answer, not to be coy and handed, is, yeah, we want to go in with this particular number and support this number. Having said that, what are we supporting? We're supporting 5%, which was the second part of the first agreement in quotation with the administration. And then we've got an augmentation above the 5%. We're coming out with more of that, and we certainly want all that to be in place. But at the same time, we want to be advocating for, not just this year, but next year in terms of those other pieces. So can query, can we, by the time May revise gets here, in the event that there's more revenues, let's say there's an extra $1 billion, we will be putting ourselves in the position at the same time asking for more at the same time for those additional revenues that come in by talking about and fleshing out what was the level of appetite of interest of technology, because we didn't get an outright rejection. What we got is an invitation to come back. Can we come back fast enough by May in order to get more, and that's the way to get there. And then there is the idea that if we could come up with other things along the way, we can, you know, make a play for those things. Whether that's 1%, but I don't think we'll figure the 1% out between now and then because it's bigger and it's broader than that, and it might be viewed as kind of like a one-off attempt. Because I feel like if we're going to make a pitch for that, we probably get one good shot at it. So if we can't figure it out in the short amount of time, just good between now and then, and then we get what we want, and then we learn a year and a half, 2 years, there was another better way, that's probably going to be a problem for us. So we'll have to have this discussion about the strategy of what makes sense for the branch, because there are going to be chances to take one good shot at it. The worry about going too quickly and too far is we might not have made enough of the case as a foundation to be able to get more. One of the things that we've talked about is, well, maybe we should reintroduce WAFM as part of the discussion. But then WAFM shows that there's a bit of a gap, and then there's some history about, well, was that right or not? View, I think the administration has certainly encouraged it for part of it, but it shows a bit of a gap, but it's also predicated on workload, and workload that is in fact changing. So I think it's, again, part of the broader discussion. The real challenge is if we go out too far too aggressively, kind of like with a full complete restoration, that's never going to be enough, we might lose a bit of the momentum that we seem to be having, because certainly the arc is proper. So I think it's a delicate balance on the advocacy to say, yes, we are in support on the with the agreement on the 5%, and we are in support of, thank you very much, the additional stuff on that. We are in support then of working with everybody for more. There's a way to do that and keep balance with all of the parties that are there, and also position ourselves for if there's more money in the spring, well, then we've laid the foundation for what the additional things should be. Again, balancing all of the interests, you know, going forward. So that's kind of at least a broad outline of the thinking, that kind of how to approach this over the next 6 months. And it seems to me that that's the best advice that I can be providing to the council and to the members of the branch right now, based on, again, the limited time that I've had a chance to hear and listen.
Judge Kuhl?
What traction was there for the discussion about additional judgeships?
Not a lot, to be real candid. There is some interest in some of the places that are more challenged, and I think everybody knows what we're talking about here. It's Riverside and San Bernardino and places in the state that really had massive growth and demands on public services. And so there's some interest there, but then there's also some concern that, you know, we've got places where we close courthouses, and we've made adjustments, and where our judges, so again, that is also a difficult discussion, but we have to approach it in a manner that the need is truly the need. It might be the kind of thing where there is more to talk about, and you can set the foundation for, again, spring. Let's say there's more money that's available when the revenues come in. We can keep talking about judges, I think, without offending the arrangement that we have. And part of the things that made things complicated is I know everybody followed the UC system story, you know, of what was going on, because they kind of had a similar arrangement to us. So this shaped a lot of the thinking also in terms of going in and approaching the administration as that was playing out. And so it's not, I don't want to say anything, you know, inappropriate or directed at the UC system, but they came out where they went in. So they came out with the 5% on it, and we're just all going to watch and see how that played out. But that, you know, that was going on at the same time as some of this was going on. So, again, I push this as round one. This was a landing with the administration. They could have, you know, taken another course, for example, on Prop 47 and simply said that's, you know, that's a voter-approved initiative. We don't have any obligation to fund any of that. But they were at least sensitive to the fact that 47 was going to make all of the difficult things here worse. And more importantly, some of the changes that people were doing, it was going to threaten and harm those. So that was certainly a good sign. And then not only was it the dollars that were going to come in, we get some of the other issues. People actually dug in to try and understand it better, I felt. So let's front load some of the money. So, you know, that gave at least, I think, me and the chief and members of the council some confidence. Okay, we are at least moving in the right direction. It's certainly a step forward, and it's a bigger step than the step that was before, and it was a bigger step than the step that we were actually expecting. So let's see if we can't keep that going. But new judgeship, I think there is some sensitivity in that limited area. Certainly, they recognize the demands that were created by the population increases in certain parts of the state. Again, more of that. I haven't really thought it all through with everybody and talked with everybody about, well, what is the proper framework to talk about this, you know, over the next 3-4 months. But we obviously are trying to get something together in the next 48, 72 hours. Because we know you're going to get hit with questions. You already are getting hit with questions. And to the extent that we can step together, we're going to want to do that.
Stephen Nash.
Do we know what comes next? So there was 2 years at 5%. We had a two-year agreement for 5% increase. Do you know what next year, I heard Mark, you were saying we're thinking about next year. What happens in the future? What's the administration thinking about what happens in the future after that?
It doesn't have a clear number on it. It doesn't have a 5%. It's not a 4. It's not a 10. You know, arguably in their view, we're above the 5 this year. And again, you know, it's complicated. I don't think we want to say too stridently that we are way above, you know, all of that. We haven't been talking about percentages or numbers. What we've been saying is this formula isn't correct, and there's more to talk about, and that's the way to get, I think, the discussions of judgeships back into the mix, whether it's quicker or later, because people are already aware of it. That's where you can get technology into the mix, because everybody can see the efficiencies related to that. And that's where you can get reserve talked about in the mix. I think the fee thing got resolved, and it just seems to me that's there. Now, if the extension permanently isn't there, well, then maybe fees also become part of the discussion. Plus, there's probably some drilling down to figure out why are filings down so you can get ahead of this. Maybe this is where collection, you know, comes into the mix. And then maybe there's a discussion of, are there changes in statute in terms of how courts operate, trials are managed, that can come into the mix. Maybe there's been an internal discussion of changing rules of courts. Some of this, I'm giving broad frameworks on these things, so I don't know how they all fit together, but there's a bigger conversation to have about how well that has, all that turns, because what you're talking about is figuring out what the cost structure is to operate the courts. And then once you know that cost structure, required to it, and you want to talk about reinvesting, well, now you know what it is, and you can put a formula or a story or a workload analysis together to say, this is the efficiency that you will get when you invest in it. So that the dollar that was invested in a court maybe 10 years ago had an efficiency value of 10 on it. Well, the new dollar that you put in the court today has an efficiency value of 20. And I hope that's not sounding too wonkish about it, but I think that's the kind of either, you know, harder analysis or kind of thinking that you can get the administration to get behind. It's kind of what the view or the approach I think that's been going on for a number of years, you know, over there is about. And it's going to take a lot of help and a lot of explaining to do all of that. I think the courts have done a pretty good job of translating some of the esotericness of this world, and it's work that was done over the last 2 or 3 years to make it make sense, more intuitive to folks along the way, not just inside the administration, but in the legislature. So long answer to your question, but it isn't didn't try to take an arbitrary approach, and there isn't a number sitting in somebody's head that it should be 7% or 20%, or it should just go back the way it was. There was an interesting set of language that was dropped into the narrative of our budget, which has been, it generally was kind of like a preface in prior budgets, which is folks receiving public funds or programs and operations receiving public funds should not expect a full and complete restoration. Nobody's got it. Well, that language sat on top of the entire state budget. That was specifically then put into our particular section. I didn't care to really see that there candidly, but there it was. And so it isn't the story of full, complete restoration with the assumption that everything was perfect and it was the best, smoothest operating court system on the planet 3 years ago. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but the story is that it came down. We recognize that there's damage and consequence to public services as a result. We want to work with you to get to a better and healthier place. So, again, that's why that's a lot of philosophy in a meeting that is about dollars and cents and money. But hopefully those things, we can get those things to come together with some clarity and we're on the right path. We think we've got the governor for 4 more years, and so we're going to do our best to work with him. But at the same time, keep pushing, because we're not satisfied with where we are today.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Corey Jasperson if you would address your thoughts on the budget and any feedback that you've received from the legislature.
Sure. I think Marvin and Zlatko covered the budget points. Marvin staffed the budget in the assembly. We were just talking about Marvin. Just so a quick update on legislation. The bill introduction deadline is February 27th, and as you know, the legislature just came back to town a couple of weeks ago. So we see every morning in my office all the new bill introductions. They're starting to trickle in. We haven't seen anything so far in our area that's significant. But I would imagine in the next couple of weeks, certainly by the time we get to mid-February, and we'll see a lot more proposals coming in, so we'll keep you up to date on that. I think that since the governor's budget came out last week, I've met with about a dozen or so legislators, just some of the new legislators coming in doing meetings, and the consensus when the budget comes up, it folks generally across the board, they recognize that the court's got a bump in the budget, and the general response has been, but we know that the courts need more, so there's that awareness there with legislators that are coming in, which I think all of you have been doing a great job back in your districts, making sure that the your legislative delegation is aware of the needs of the court. So that's where we are on the legislative calendar.
Thank you. Any last questions for Martin or Corey or Zlatko on the budget? All right. We'll go to our next agenda item. I forgot to mention when we started, we did not have any written public comments or requests to provide public comments at the meeting personally, so I wanted to get that out of the way. Item two is a review of the fund condition statements for the trust fund and the state trial court improvement and modernization fund.
So we're going to have Stephen Chang go over those details for you. They are in your materials on page 46. At the back of your TCTF and the IMF trial court trust fund and improvement modernization fund.
I'll give you a couple of seconds to find that. Page 46, attachment 2A. We'll start with the trial court trust fund. I'll give you the bottom line found on column B, row 41. So our current estimate is the ending unrestricted fund balance for this fiscal year is 7.5 at this point in time. That's about a 7.5 million increase from what we were projecting in our November meeting. You can find that in column B, the same row 41. Really, that wasn't our actual projection. We knew that it would be a little bit higher. We were assuming at that point in time full expenditures for all the programs, but I'll walk you through what has changed in our assumptions. In column C, you'll see in row 13 that we, since the Budget Act, there's been a $11.2 million increase in our funding from general fund transfer, and that's associated with the funding for judges' compensation increase. So judges received a 1.4% increase effective July 1st, 2013, which the 12-part trust was not funded for, by the way, in that fiscal year. It came from our existing resources. And then additional 1.83% increase effective this fiscal year, July 1st. So the $11.2 million represents the full funding to cover the cost associated with both of those increases in the compound effect of that. In column D, row 2, at this point in time, we are estimating the savings or related to disencumbrances and contractual obligations about $2 million. So that will be an adjustment to our beginning balance next year, and there will be additional resources. And the major source of savings we are estimating right now are in column D, row 26, is associated with the compensation of judges due to the continued, not historically high, but still a fairly high vacancy rate in judgeships. So we're projecting at this point $5.6 million on my staff who spent a lot of time on this. This is fairly conservative. It could be as high as $7 million. Right now we're going to go with a $5.6 million. So given the changes right now, we're projecting a $7.5 million ending fund balance in 14-15. Just one note on row 36 for the court interpreter program, column E. We don't know exactly what the expenditures are going to be for the court interpreter's reimbursement. Right now, the appropriation is going to be about $94.6 million at row 28. You know, with the new changes in law and also with the council policy, courts can't spend more on providing services in civil cases. And so we'll see how that turns out, and we'll have a better idea in the next couple of months. But it's possible that those savings are a little bit high. We probably will end up with some amount of savings. Again, those are restricted, so no matter what, it's going to roll over to the following fiscal year. In terms of 15 and 16, let me just point out two items that have already been mentioned. First, we're in column F now, the last column on the right. You'll see in row 15, compared to column E, which is column right to the left of it, that the transfer from improvement fund goes from $26 million down to $6 million. So we're going to retain $20 million in the state trial court improvement fund. So that reduces the resources in the trial court trust fund by $21 million. However, at the same time, if you look at column F, row 22, and also column E, you'll see that it goes from seven expenditures related to the program. It goes from $17 million down to $11 million. That's for the cost associated with the D3 case management system, the civil case management system. So although we're losing $20 million, revenue, we're also saving $6 million in expenditures. So it has about $14 million. So the bottom line for 15-16 right now is that we're projecting, we're projecting a negative fund balance at this point. Again, row 41 column is $2.7 million. And that's assuming that we're going to get $30.9 million of backfill this year, plus additional $19 million, if needed, up to $19 million in addition to that next year if our revenue projections are going to continue to be home as we're projecting. Any questions about the trial court trust fund? Okay, let's turn to the state trial court trust fund. The next page over, page 47. Right, sorry. State trial court improvement and modernization fund. This will go by more quickly. We'll just focus on column C and D. We'll focus on 14-15 and 15-16. In November, we are projecting a fund balance of about $3.5 million. Right now, we're projecting for 14-15. If you look at column C, row 22, projecting ending fund balance about $2.8 million. So a decline of $1 million. Why? Mainly because there was one county that was audited by the state controller's office, and it was found that they had over-remitted their 50-50 remittance over the past few years by to the tune of about $1 million. So the state controller did was just went into reaching to the improvement fund and took $1 million from our cash. So that's why our projection is down by $1 million. Still, we're solvent in 14-15. In 15-16, we're projecting, we're in column D, row 5 and 6, continued decline in the revenues associated that are remitted to the IMF. These are almost all related to criminal cases, although there's some indexing and registration fees that the counties collect. They are subject to split between the counties and the IMF. That is not necessarily, that declined significantly during the Great Recession, during the real estate crash, and has come back up, but not anywhere close to where it's been. but the others are continuing to decline, basically the baselines of the state penalty. So we're seeing a continued decline, projecting a continued decline in those two revenue sources. You'll see in column 12, consistent with what we were talking about with respect to the trial court trust fund, that there's going to be $20 million more dollars in revenue because of transferring, we're retaining $20 million in the IMF. So you'll see in column C, it was a transfer to negative $20.5 million. It goes down to only $5,400,000. So that shows the $20 million that we're keeping in the IMF. And if you go down to row 19, column D, you'll see that those are the B3 costs will now be absorbed, being proposed to be absorbed from the IMF. The bottom line for 15 and 16, given our revenue projections, and what the governor is proposing in terms of retaining $20 million in IMF and transferring about $6.3 million of costs to the IMF, we're projecting a negative fund balance of $12.8 million expenditures, assuming that we continue the same level of expenditures that was allocated by the council this fiscal year. The revenue deficit is $15 million, you see in column 23. Okay. What we've been doing is scrutinizing our encumbrances earlier in the year. We waited probably too long in the past. So this year, we started July 1st, starting off, we asked our offices to do a review pretty much on a monthly, daily basis to look at what their encumbrances are. And so as a result of the effort so far, we have identified about $3 million in prior year encumbrances related to fiscal year 12-13. Encumbrances. So encumbrances, I think courts are now familiar with encumbrances because that's excludable from your 1% fund balance, but encumbrances are contractual obligations. In state accounting, because we're on an appropriation basis, the fund balance actually does reflect that your encumbrances assume that are all fully expended. Your fund balance, the way you report your expenditures on a GAAP basis, don't do that, but for the purpose of your 1% calculation, you can exclude encumbrances, contractual obligations that have on the carryover from the fund balance. So based on that review, if you look in column C, row 2, right now, it's about a $3.3 million of contractual obligations we don't think we're actually going to have to use, and so we can if we haven't already disencumbered it, we're going to disencumber it by the end of this year. The reason why it's $2.3 million is because the $1 million has been taken away. That's a negative adjustment, so that doesn't benefit or help our fund balance. And also, just a quick last note on column C, row 18, from the $7.1 million allocation that the council approved this year, we think there's going to be savings of about $3 million. I don't know. That might change. We might see some additional savings. At this point in time, we're estimating about $2.9 million.
Questions or comments? Yes, Mr. Zero.
So for those of you who are new to the committee, the Budget Committee does have a subcommittee, which is the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee, chaired by Judge Slau and Sherry Carter. And that the role of the members of that committee is to do an annual review of the trust fund and revenues and expenditures in the trust fund and the improvement and modernization fund. We've done this every year. We'll do it again. Probably that committee will get together in February and review especially the IMF and that deficit and make decisions or recommendations to the council on how to address that deficit. And there are a number of very important programs and projects that are funded from the IMF that are relied on by the trial courts. CGER is one of them that's funded out of that, some of our the IT services that we get that are from the AOC who have developed them for us are funded out of that. So they're not easy decisions, but this is something that group will have to wrestle with and make a recommendation to the council on how to address that deficit. Any questions for Blocko or Stephen on the fund conditions of these two funds? Alan Carlson.
So going back to the discussion, I'm going to look at the proper trust fund condition statement on the civil fee revenue. So how does the discussion before about the shortfall of the $4 million or now $4 million fit into these numbers? Because this shows the same number we started the year and where we are now, the $358 million. Is that where the shortfall would show up, if there is one? Or has it already been taken into account in these
So, I'm not sure what you're talking about, the $4 million shortfall. I can't.
Well, there was the, whatever it was, 50, 22, 4. I mean, it keeps rotating around what it is.
But isn't this where that would show up?
Yes, that's where it would show up. But it actually declined. So that was an estimate in November. So really need to look at column A. That's 13.4. So the decline from, if you look at column A, row 6,
right.
After 58 million.
It went from 384 to 358.
Right.
But we still show 358 in column E, which is supposedly a current projection.
That's right.
That one just hasn't changed. I mean, isn't that where the 4 million would show up if it's four more than?
Well, there was a difference between like published. The most recent non-published is 4. The 11 was what we did back in November when we talked to you about where was the gap. So this is based on those projections then. Just the one we're talking about, the 4 million, was just based on the most recent data that we talked about a couple of weeks ago at staff level. So we haven't shown this at the current levels based on our, you know, two more months of data. So we wanted to stay consistent to the data we provided you. So there hasn't been an official update because we, over these, the end of December, we had to talk to Kerr, we had to talk to Martin to, you know, to get down to, okay, this is what we're going to do our next update, especially if the governor's budget's coming out, that the revenue projections remain consistent because we wouldn't want to be, you know, where's that number, they're not matching to what the...
So if you say at a staff level the 358 should be 354, assuming a $4 million further reduction, does that mean the line 41, the 7.5 is maybe only 3.5, but we're covered for the 4?
You're saying that we will be, based on these savings, we should be able to cover the 4.
Okay. That's,
yes, and if there's other savings, that would then ensure that there's a fund balance that can help with next year's issue with the TCTF-IMF interaction and the revenue drop.
I'm trying to look at whether I should plan for another $4 million
right.
Kind
yeah.
of share. Not come on there now.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
The other thing just about it's not just civil fees, although civil fees has been finally contributed to the shortfall. It's also a court operations assessment, which is the criminal revenue that's also been on the decline. So mine
is the same as all the other fees, fines and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, so line 7 has that at 149 in 13-14 projection, 14-15 is 140, down to 131 in 15-16.
Yeah.
Judge Conklin?
Just briefly, I'll back on these. Concord Trust Fund, the line 26 and the estimated savings of $5.6 million for the compensation of judges. Does that mean we're hoping he doesn't appoint?
It's not a hope, it's just an estimate of actual behavior.
Okay, so I know we had a discussion about not getting new judges, but I'm sure encouraging him to give us what we're due.
No, it's not an encouragement. It is a matter of current vacancy rates remaining. And not in any no assumption that it's just what the numbers are. We're not making any no policy statement or request or anything. It just is what it is.
All right.
But we've already had some. This is Alan's.
Yes.
From
yeah,
July
up until today.
Right. But some of this is already
already in the books.
Realized. So.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a matter of the remaining portion of the fiscal year
for some of us.
Jake Chatters.
Okay. So for column F.
What fund?
Child Court Trust Fund. So the discussion before when Flotco, this is Jake Chatters. So column F on the Child Court Trust Fund chart, which is looking at 15-16. For Flotco, when you're walking through the governor's budget and what was the shortage in the Child Court Trust Fund, right, so we had, I'm going to round the numbers, right, so we had $30 million that was covered in the current year, $22-ish million that was not covered in the current year, and then an amount in the budget year that's covered. That $22 million was not. So it wasn't covered this year, and it's not covered in the governor's proposed budget. Based on what the net is at the bottom of column F, I'm guessing that $22 million shortfall is already assumed to also have been reduced out of expenditures.
The allocations were reduced, yes.
So this is already building in that allocation reduction that was passed on to all trial courts this year for that $22 million would remain.
Correct. Right, that's right. But this is for your row 25, support of trial court operations. That's 22.7 million dollars reduction in that row for those 2 years.
Other questions?
item on our agenda is our first action item, and it is allocations for information technology from the State Trial Court Improvement and Modernization Fund. I would ask Arab Oyem, who is the Chief Information Officer from the Santa Clara Superior Court, to join me. Rob would be here to answer any questions that you all might have. You may remember that last year, several times throughout the end of the year, I advised you that in kind of in an effort to get our arms around the deficit that's in the IMF budget, we, myself, along with Judge Jim Herman, who chairs the Judicial Council Technology Committee, put together a work group to look at the specific costs from the IMF that are related or devoted to technology. And we are here to update you on the work of that working group and to bring you a recommendation of that working group. The working group members, I'll remind you of who they are, besides myself and Judge Herman. Judge Slough was part of the work group, as was Sherry Carter. Remember, they chair the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee. We also have, from the Trial Court Budget Committee, we had Debbie Norrie, who is the CEO of the Plumas Superior Court. We had Lee Kirby, who's the CEO of Sierra, and in our minds, it was important to include representatives from those very, very tiny courts that rely almost exclusively on, or hosted courts on the California Court Technology Center and the same court. They don't have court information officers. They don't have technology staff, IT staff on site, so they rely on shared services. They rely on services provided from the AOC and the AOC Technology Office, so we thought it important to have them there as we went through these discussions as well. We asked some chief information officers from throughout the state to participate, including Rob from the Santa Clara Superior Court, Greg Harding from the Superior Court of Placer, who's their chief information officer, Snorri Ogata from Los Angeles, Brian Peterson, who's also from Santa Clara. He's the chair of the Court Information Technology Managers Forum. Zlatko participated, Mark Dustman, and Diana Earle from the Judicial Council IT Department. We first began meeting in, September, and we met by phone most of the time, and then in between meetings that there would be some data collected and work generated to try to inform the work group. The manner in which we approached this task was to first determine, kind of at a high level, roughly how much of the IT budget from the IMF needed to be reduced. And we've taken a snap of the fund condition statement summary. We do have a PowerPoint that we are presenting, and that will be posted to the website. We took a snap of the IMF fund condition statement. That, I think, was an earlier shot in time than the one that we saw today. But there was a, as you can see, a projected reduction in total IMF resources in the next fiscal year of, at that time, just under $7 million. And that is shown on line 16 of this slide in column, well, it would be column E. This was a snapshot from October 9th, 2014. The total of all planned IMF expenditures for 15-16 is just under $72 million, as you can see, and like I said, $7 million of reduction in IT costs. Out of the total $72 million of planned IMF expenditures for 15-16, $36 million was proposed for IT. So as you can see, expenditures from IT out of the IMF were almost about 50% of that IMF fund. In looking at it, we looked at if we were taking this kind of on a pro rata basis, these reductions. If IT expenditures were half of the total expenses, one approach would be to consider half of the total IMF funding reduction of just under $7 million and allocate that to IT, so they would share in about half of that reduction. Therefore, we were looking for approximately just under $3.5 million of cost reduction from the IT program. And that turned out to be about a 10% reduction in total funding to IT programs. When we began evaluating the programs from the IT programs from the IMF, we focused initially on the top four most expensive programs. And as you can see them on slide four, we did not include line five, the interim case management system, which includes CCMS-V3 and postage sustain, as that was already being addressed by the Judicial Council Technology Committee. So we didn't want to duplicate efforts. They were currently working on that. So we focused on these top four programs, which represents about 84% of the total IT cost. Our goal, or our objectives, if you will, was to try to find a way to reduce technology costs, which are funded from the IMF, to evaluate the needs and priorities of the trial court in terms of what programs are funded out of the IMF, and determine whether we could reduce costs for these programs. So it was kind of a clean slate. We looked at, you know, can we do without any of these programs? Can we pare them back any? Are there any of these programs that the trial courts could take on themselves? Or are there any costs for these programs that should be absorbed by the trial court? So those were kind of the objectives of how we approached our work before us. So we're on slide six, which is the proposed actions that we bring to you today. And it's important to note that these actions, as they were developed, were vetted. First, they were vetted with our court information officers at their quarterly meeting in October. This is what we're thinking. Please give us feedback on that. The feedback was positive. And additionally, we asked Debbie Norrie to reach out to the hosted courts. I think there's nine hosted and sustained courts, the smaller courts, and discuss these proposed actions with them. And she did. She talked to all of the CEOs individually, reviewed the actions with them, got their feedback and any concerns they had, and brought that back to the committee. And that was largely positive as well. So, again, these are the proposed feedbacks. Proposed actions, I can give you a brief understanding of what these various programs are. And again, Rob can provide further information if you have questions. The LAN-WAN Network Refresh Program. This is a program that replaces older computer networking equipment at the courts to ensure that they can exchange data and information with justice partners and other courts. It's really the backbone in connecting all of the court's computers within a court and providing access to the internet and enabling data and information exchange between courts and justice partners. So we propose that this program be funded as proposed. All of the courts, all courts participate in it. Our recommendation is that it be funded as proposed. We also bring a recommendation to initiate the next generation hosting project on some of these plans. As you can see, that includes the California Courts Technology Center, the data integration programs like TIPCO, integration services, hosted PLETs, that type of thing. The next generation hosting project is outlined in the Judicial Branch Tactical Plan for Technology. It's something that the Judicial Council Technology came up with that was approved by the Council in August. We did not want to, again, we weren't looking to do anything different than that tactical plan that they're proceeding on. But what we are, and you'll see when we get into the next page, there are some actions that we are requesting that occur, but as far as California Courts Technology Center and the data integration, we're just recommending that be go along with the tactical plan work stream to identify cost reduction opportunities. We also looked at the Oracle Enterprise license. Many courts use Oracle licenses. We are interested in looking at whether or not we can renegotiate the license to reduce costs, if we can better appreciate what we get for all of those licenses and how the costs are apportioned. We don't have a good grasp of that. So we are recommending that we determine the need for renegotiation, kind of break down that contract a little bit. Of course, the
we are making bringing a recommendation regarding the sustained projects. Again, we're not, we're just recommending that V2 sunset as the council has already approved, and V3, if the Judicial Council Technology Committee determines it should sunset, then it go along with their tactical plan. But we are making a recommendation to postpone some of the non-critical, and I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek, non-critical sustained programs. These are programs hosted by the council, and they, they're non-critical software upgrades, so we would just postpone those upgrades for a period of time. Regarding the California Court Protective Order Registry, we anticipate the branch, it relies on some grant funding to continue deployment. We anticipate the grant, the branch may not receive that grant funding this year, and our recommendation is to continue the deployment only if, to other courts, only if grant funds are available rather than trying to supplement the funding from the IMS. This is one used heavily by our justice partners, and we hope our justice partners recognize that sometimes in dire times, calls for dire actions, and maybe they can make a decision to step up and help with that since they rely on that registry. We also recommend that the testing tools for V3 sunset should the Judicial Council Technology Committee recommend the sunset of V3. And lastly, we recommend postponing the spending of grant money for jury improvement. It would not be spent this year. Most of the jury systems in place are quite mature and don't require many major upgrades or new deployments, so we would just defer that this year. The next slide, which is slide 7.
Hey, Jill.
Yes, sir.
So on the postponing the jury management system improvement, you say this year. When would that be effective? Anything as of now? Anything as of the fiscal year?
It would be, all of these would take place in 15-16.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Judge Long.
Actually.
Okay.
So how does the, given that the jury management systems are funded from the royalties from the jury instruction, how does that help the fund? Because of the restricted money, is my understanding.
You're right, it is restricted funds. It's just a matter of accumulating either the positive and negative balance. There were some expenditures in prior years that were made out of the modernization fund that, in theory, have some reimbursement from resources that have been accumulated in the improvement fund. So there's a sort of an over expenditure on jury from prior years. And so continuing that would just exacerbate that. We've actually, from a historical perspective, spend a little bit more than the revenues that jury has been generating. So from an overall use of those funds, we're not in a problem of not spending it because jury actually hasn't generated enough revenues over the last 5 years to have funded all of the costs that were allocated in prior years.
So we're paying ourselves back, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Jose?
Did the committee consider reducing the telecommunications? I know that's a live line, but any, let's say, $2 million, and if they did, what would that have, what impact that would have on the courts?
So there was actually a earlier exercise in the year to reevaluate the spending in that land fund. I don't recall the original number, but I believe that there was already a reduction of somewhere around $2 to $3 million in the original proposal based on prioritizing critical updates. And so this is actually a reflection of the net reduction already.
Any questions? The next slide, slide 7, describes kind of the timing and impact of the proposed action. We recognize that some of these actions will take a considerable period of time to
fully implement. So we broke down our recommendations into short-term actions that we think can be accomplished within 12 months, medium-term actions that would take between 12 and 24 months, and long-term actions that would take a bit longer to be able to complete the full analysis of the proposed action. As you can see, the ones that would recommend implementing as of July 1, that really the impact would be felt as of next fiscal year, is to delay the non-critical sustain projects, delay deployment of if grant funds aren't available for the 4 to 6 courts of the CCPOR, and delay non-critical jury improvements. The in the short term, that would result in about a $1 million savings, which would eat away a little bit at the deficit in the IMF. In the kind of middle term actions, we need to determine whether there's any potential savings by renegotiating the Oracle licensing agreement. Of course, we have to get folks to take a look at that agreement and fully understand the costs associated with the services that come from those licenses. Savings from this aren't known at this point, because we have to do kind of a comparative analysis. And in the long term, we anticipate that there could be major savings by reevaluating the court CCTC data center services and the data integration services. There's certainly newer technology and new services that the branch could potentially adopt, which could be more cost effective. But this project is very complex and will require a considerable period of time and considerable expertise to complete. So it's something that we think we should take to the council now, so that because it's important that it gets started now if we want to appreciate these savings within the next 2 to 3 years, but certainly not anything that's going to be able to contribute to the deficit for next year. So the recommendations that we, well, one other thing that I want to address is, and it's some of one of the recommendations here, when we did this analysis, we recognized that there's perhaps some efficiencies that could be attained by the smaller ports that they're not able to attain right now without the assistance of maybe other courts. And so we suggest, as you'll see in item number 3 in our recommendation, the recommendation is slightly different. I'm just paraphrasing it in the slideshow, but we do recommend that the Judicial Council Technology Committee consider creating a work group to focus on IT efficiencies, and I'll explain that recommendation more thoroughly when we get to them. They are on page 8 of the material that's in your packet today. So the first recommendation is that the Judicial Council recommends that the Judicial Council Technology Committee oversee the implementation of the proposed actions, which were outlined in the materials today. It's attachment 2D. They're the short-term, medium-term, and long-term actions, and that they initiate them immediately so as to be able to reap the benefits of those fairly quickly. The second recommendation is that the Judicial Council IT office consider reducing as many external contractors as possible. We recognized in our analysis that there are a fair number of contractors that support the JCC IT department, and of course, external contractors have a specific domain of knowledge, but they're typically more costly than permanent employees. They can be when you compare employee benefit package, maybe not, but our suggestion is they consider reducing as many as possible. That will reduce some of the cost in the IMF. And lastly, we recommend the Judicial Council Technology Committee consider, as part of their technology strategic and tactical plans and governance and funding model. So this is a strategic and tactical plan that the Judicial Council Technology Committee has developed and has been, I think, approved by the council, that they consider, consistent with that plan, putting together a working group comprised of specific members with expertise on trial court programs and expertise from the small courts,
to focus on efficiencies and cost-saving measures for the smaller courts, including an analysis of replacing or renegotiating CCTC-hosted services, as well as hosting or service collaboration opportunities with other courts. So those are the three recommendations we bring to you today. This would not supplant any recommendations that the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee might bring forward to this group after their full review of the IMF programs and projects. The reason that we jumped on this as early as we did is because we knew that IT was a big expense out of the IMF. We knew it would take some time to get our arms around this, and we knew it would take some time to implement these recommendations if approved. So let me just ask Rob if he wants to add anything that I may have missed or explain anything further, and then we'll open it up to questions. Okay. Questions? So I see Judge Kuehl and then Chris Wolfers.
I was wondering, Judge Earl, if you could elaborate on recommendation two. We're falling short, of course, of the hoped for savings in recommendation one. And I'm wondering if you could elaborate on maybe the types of expenditures that the subcommittee found or the working group found and the order of magnitude that we're talking about here, because I'm wondering whether there are some additional savings that might be hoped for from that category of the recommendation.
I'll ask Rob to address that.
So recommendation two focuses around reducing the number of external contractors. And so those external contractors today are performing IT services and providing IT expertise that is difficult to obtain, and so that therefore they're being contracted out today. What we did was we actually looked at the top four programs, and we identified that about 18% of the costs of those programs are allocated to personnel. Of those programs, we found that contractors were about 60% higher in cost than permanent employees. So I think that there has been an effort to try to replace external contractors with permanent employees, but again, because of the nature of the specific subject matter expertise, it's somewhat difficult to do that. However, we are encouraging that that activity continue. In terms of the magnitude of cost, basically for those top four programs or so, the cost of the contracted staff is about $3.4 million, which would be higher than a rough estimate of about maybe $2 million if they were all replaced by permanent staff. So we're looking at a difference of potentially $1.3 million in contracted, replacing contracted staff with full-time employees. Now, we think that potentially some of those functions could be evaluated to determine if existing expertise within the branch and within Judicial Council IT staff could absorb some of those responsibilities as well. There's a lot of talent in Judicial Council IT staff right now. If some of those responsibilities could be absorbed, then that cost could be reduced even further.
Chris Bokers and then Kurt Sobel.
I'm looking at recommendation number three, and that's just quite a first sentence that goes on and on and on. So I'm wondering if you could reword it, even to the summary that Judge Earl presented up here, or simply the Judicial Council recommends that the Judicial Council Technology Committee look at cost-saving measures for smaller courts. I think that's the point of the paragraph. It could be that whole quite a sentence.
Is that your motion?
Yes.
Sure. Kurt Soderlund.
Thank you. Judge Earl, just to bring everybody up to speed, this is Kurt Soderlund, that we do have an ongoing conversion program that was started about 18 months ago with trying to switch contractors into staff, if you will, and to date we've converted about 20 of those positions, but it's a program that's ongoing for us. We keep trying to make sure that we get all those contractors converted to staff at some point in the future.
Judge Good, and then Doug, and then Mary Beth.
I have a question that sort of pulls the focus back. I have no quarrel with anything that has been presented
we're told is we're projecting for next fiscal year a $12.8 million hole. If half of the expenditures are in this IP stuff, and we're only going to save $1 million, or that's 2.4, that reduces the hole to maybe 10 point something million dollars or 11 point something. And my understanding is you can't have a hole. So if this is all we're recommending for this year, how do we manage the rest of it so that we don't have this big a hole? Because otherwise we would decimate everything else in the IMF to close that hole. And if we're looking at the whole picture, I wonder if we have to make some tougher decisions about IT, unless we've got some larger strategy for dealing with a $12 million deficit.
That's a good question, and as I indicated earlier, this is not the only recommendation. This is just the first one. The others would be generated by a discussion and recommendation from the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee. And you are right. We are going to have to make some very difficult decisions this year, not just in IT, but all the other programs that are funded from the IMF. And we've done a scrubbing of that fund in previous years in an effort to try to reduce costs before. And there's not a lot in there that, in fact, I'd say there's nothing in there that's not of value to the trial court. So we do have a difficult decision to make. As I understood today in Stephen Chang's and Flacco's presentation, they think they've identified approximately $3 million in disencumbrance of contractual obligations that will assist in reducing that $12 million number. Of course, you're right, this only adds another $1 million for this year, so that means, if I do my math right, that we have about $8 million more to go.
We already counted for that.
We did? The what?
Well,
never mind. My math wasn't right.
Should
never remind me. So
your math was right. Your assumption was wrong.
My assumption was wrong. You are correct. This is not the only recommendation. This is one we needed to bring to you early so that we could get started on it. But as I said, we expect to have a meeting this committee meeting in March, where the Revenue Expenditure Subcommittee would report back their recommendations. Will not be an easy decision.
But will the Revenue and Expenditure Committee still have on the chopping block, if you will, the same issues?
They will once again be looking at IT. They'll look at everything. This was one where we really wanted to bring in kind of the subject matter experts, our folks who work directly in the IT world, to pick their brains on what do they think we can afford to scale back or do without. And this is the feedback we got from them. Now we want to focus on, from a judicial perspective and from a court executive offer perspective, which is what is involved in the subcommittee, what has value, how would you prioritize these, and what has value? I've also asked Mark Moschino to have his staff start working on budget drills, if you will. What are their budget for this year and the next 3 years? I've asked Justice Miller for the council to give us what are their priorities, what are the trial court's priorities for programs funded out of the IMF, and so that's information we hope to have and be able to consider when the subcommittee meets. Mary Beth.
So I think you just addressed what I was going to bring up, which was very similar, which was the initial approach to get to the dollar number was assuming that all programs being funded from IMF have equal importance. And it sounds like that acknowledged you're trying to get a head start here, but that work still remains to be done as far as prioritizing the program as we dig deep and try to make these cuts. So I think
yes.
That's addressed.
Rebecca Fleming, and then I think I saw Kim Turner and Kimberly Fleming and Judge Kuehl.
Central, I just would like to clarify on recommendation number 2. The recommendation is considering reducing the contractors, not because we have unnecessary services, but rather as a result of a cost analysis with employment, correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Kim Turner?
So I just have a question about the LAN-WAN project, which I think is an incredibly valuable project to the trial court. But I'm wondering, Rob, if you can comment on, because it's an expensive program, $10 million, on I realize that when we roll out new routers and switches and what have you, we're doing really some risk mitigation there too, because it's not like these things wear out and stop working one day. It's just that, you know, the new technology over the hill gets a little faster, a little better, and what have you. So have you looked at a strategy of stretching out further the sustainability of the existing routers and switches and other infrastructure technology, rather than replacing them kind of on a, you know, on a cycle that was established back when we had money? Have you looked at that as a strategy for that particular line item?
Actually, that is the strategy for the replacement. So although there is replacement of equipment on a annual basis, it's different ports every year. And so what happens is, as the equipment within a particular court ages and it comes close to its end of life, that's the point where that equipment is upgraded. So unlike software, where software releases come out maybe once every couple of years or so, and you get a few new features, some of those upgrades are optional. With hardware, you have similar upgrades, but the strategy for this particular project is not to actually replace and upgrade the hardware every time a new version comes out. It actually, the strategy is actually to replace it as it approaches its end of life. And so, unfortunately, because each of the courts sort of stagger their upgrades and installation of hardware, we do have sort of waves of replacement every year, but it is different courts every year, and it is aging equipment that needs to be replaced.
Okay, thank you.
Kimberly? Just for clarification, Tim Flinner, you, Superior Court. On number two, the recommendation reads to recommend Judicial Council IT Office consider reducing. So I'm just looking for clarification with that language. I think that, again, to Kurt's comment, any committee did review some of those contracts, did review them with regard to personnel costs, having an employee versus a contractor, and some of those very difficult services to retain an employee or even recruit. So I'm just wondering how specific we're getting with that. Is it going to be a directive, and that is that this committee's role?
Well, it is not, which is why we worded the recommendation as we did, and I apologize if it's unclear. It's certainly not our role to tell another committee, especially an internal committee, what they should do. Our recommendation is simply that we think that there are obviously expensive costs with using contractors, and that the IT office ought to look at reducing those costs by trying to replace those contractors with permanent employees. But we are mindful that they also report to the Judicial Council Technology Committee, and in governance structure, that it's that group that would kind of give them their direction, the council through the technology committee, not through the budget committee. So from a budget perspective, we are suggesting that this is what they do, but we thought for governance purposes, it needs to come from the council, and it needs to go to the Judicial Council Technology Committee, and that's our role, just making that recommendation. So I apologize if it's unclear, but we're trying to respect kind of the governance structure we have. Judge Kuehl, I had next. Sorry. And then Rick Feldstein.
So, you know, going back to basics, of course, IMF funds are funds expended for the benefit of the trial court. And going back to this point about the potential savings with respect to external contractors, as external contractors are either eliminated or replaced, as Kurt said, what was going on, is that savings being scored for the IMF, for savings to the IMF expenditure?
It would be, yes. If that replacement of contracted employees occurred in programs funded from the IMF where their salaries come from, it would directly impact the IMF.
And that's being tracked.
Yes, that's being tracked. Rick Feldstein.
Comment about replacing equipment at the end of life. And I think what you're saying is not so much end of life in terms of something stopping working, but the fact that it often becomes no longer supported or repairable because of lack of parts and service. And it's actually much more economical in the long run to do that on an incremental basis rather than extending down too far.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Thanks. Let me go down. then Jake Chatters.
So I'm just going to circle back to Chris Volker's comment as it relates to recommendation number three, and I would, it's just the way it's worded is very clunky, and I don't mean to be persnickety about it, but I think it could be worded a little differently, and I'm not a wordsmith, so I'll leave that to someone smarter than me.
I think that Chris's motion was to on the slide now, which is slide number eight, use the language that appears on item three. This is my summary language of our recommendation. I think that was Chris's motion to use that language.
Yeah.
Is there a second to that?
Yes.
Jake Chatters.
I need to read it.
Jake, it should be known, Jake is also, you're on a our technology advisory committee?
Correct. And which is why actually, the work plan for the Core Technology Advisory Committee is not approved yet for this year. But I did go look while we were in this discussion to see which portions of this are already on what may be the approved work plan. And one of them is looking at the next, I think it's called the next generation hosting strategy. So looking at, CCTC, is that the right structure? Is there a different structure? But that may be on the plan for this year. It's one of the shortlists that's under consideration. And so, recommendation number three, which now has a motion and a second, I guess I'm a little concerned about the governance over that, that if Core Technology Advisory Committee already has a project to look at hosting on its own, do we need a separate project through the Technology Committee looking at that concept, which is what I think three kind of sounds like, or is three that's talking about efficiencies and effective practices and smaller cores, is that really a CEAC, Core Executive Advisory Committee, project where we're working together on the court side, how do we share resources, how do we deal with that? So I'm not really sure if that's something that would make sense in the Core Technology Advisory Committee or with JCTC itself, so I'm not sure about that one. Number one makes sense to me. I understand number one is saying, is asking, is what we were trying to set up in terms of governance is that the Budget Committee is saying, we have X number of dollars. Technology is asking for $40 million, we only have 30. Well, then technology, they need to figure out how they're going to cut $10 million. That really isn't the Budget Committee necessarily that's deciding which of those projects move forward. So number one makes sense to me, but number three, I'm not sure that isn't already taken care of in that work plan or maybe a CEAC function.
So we knew that that part of that work plan had that on the proposed agenda, but we thought this was different. We thought the focus was different, that this is really focusing on efficiencies and cost-saving measures for the smaller courts. Of course, it won't reduce the IMF, but it will help those smaller courts be able to sustain at a time when there's reduced resources. So we thought that this was different, which is why we need to point that out. Whether or not you think this belongs more on, referred to CEAC, referred jointly to the PJs and the CEAC committee, I don't know. Judge Koch.
I guess a question about procedure here. There's a motion, there's a second, and I understood the motion just to be to change the language of number three, and then are we going to vote on all three at the same time?
Well, we can take them separately, but so far
I kind of like to vote on all three, but maybe others have a different view, but I do think we ought to dispose of that. Can I move the previous question?
Well, you can, although right now the question, you can. Although I would invite discussion on that since Jake just raised the issue of we're recommending that the Judicial Council Technology Committee create this work group, and he's raised the question of is that the right place for it to go.
I understand that. I think she's just wanted to change the language of it, not the content, really. And I'd just like to get that out of the way so that we can make other motions.
Well, the question is there a discussion on changing the language further so that it's not going to the Judicial Council Technology Committee, it's going somewhere else? Are there thoughts on that?
I think we need to discuss it. So what do we need? I don't know Robert's rules real well, but so how do we dispose of
well, we
take
can
care of the motion that's pending?
Let's
so
do
we
that.
Can go on. Or someone needs to make a friendly amendment.
Yeah, this is Alan. I would propose a friendly amendment to just take out the technology committee and just say the Judicial Council recommend that a committee or the designated committee to consider that. Let them figure out who does it.
Okay.
general counsel,
consider creating. You're just getting out of the recommend that.
Any thoughts on that? All right, so I'll call that question. Is there, we've had a motion and a second, so that it would be that the Judicial Council consider creating a working group to focus on IT efficiencies and cost-saving measures for smaller courts. All in favor?
What would it, that's going to be a clarification. I thought we talked about or designate an existing.
So consider creating or designating an existing.
To an existing advisory committee. Or committee or.
You have to.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
So consider creating a working group or designating an existing advisory committee.
Right. To focus on.
Right. All right.
I think Judge Harmon seconded. Are you willing to second it with that additional language? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So that language has changed.
Judge Cope? Did you have a further motion?
Well, I'd like to move that the recommendations then as amended be adopted.
All right. Should we move them all together? Is there further discussion about recommendations 1 and 2?
Can I ask if that clarification addressed the issue?
Okay. There's a motion. Judge Cope moved to move to all recommendations now. Sherry Carter is second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, and thank you. The next item on our agenda is item number 4, budget change proposal for funding trial court security costs, and Sean Landry is going to take this.
Okay, as everyone knows, as of 2011 realignment, money for security moved to the counties. It was about $485 million moved to counties, and trial court baseline budgets were reduced by an equal amount. $41 million remained with trial courts that had provided private security court through court attendants, marshals, and it paid for other miscellaneous security equipment. Since that time, no additional security money for trial court has been allocated, unlike the sheriff's department that have received a growth funding through a series of government codes and sales and user tax fees. Over the last 3 years, that growth factor has equaled about 2.4%. The Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee approved the subcommittee, or the working group, rather, to go out and survey the courts and try to ascertain what the costs were to the courts that had existing security services, and also develop a costing methodology in support of a spring BCP, and that was approved by the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. However, there was additional work that needed to be done, and we specifically met to look at what the growth factor should be and what the baseline amount should be to that would tie that growth, what the growth factor should be tied to. So there are really two issues that we contemplated on our January 8th call, and that was, first, the growth factor. And option one articulates the request for a growth rate increase for courts that provided security starting in 2016 through 17 should that be the same growth factor as provided by the as the county sheriffs receive? That's option one. Option two is to delay the growth factor increase and wait until a fiscal year 16-17. Correct?
Yeah.
And the reason for that is we talked about whether we should just move forward now with the growth factor, similar to the sheriff's option one, or do we wait to see what the allocation would be and delay that. The second option that we considered is the baseline for the growth factor. What should that money be attached to? Should it be the $41 million that courts received at the time of realignment in 2010-11, or should it be another amount of money? Option three contemplates that it should be not the $41 million, but we should back out for private security positions. I'm sorry. For positions in private security that were permanently reduced. So there were some trial courts that permanently reduced security services, staff benefits, and the reason why we contemplated backing out staff benefits from the $41 million is because there is a different funding stream for staff benefits. And then also we considered backing out from the $41 million equipment costs. Option four basically goes forward and says, no, we're going to go with the whole amount of the $41 million for the growth factor. The recommendation of the working group is option two and option three. And I'll turn it over to anyone on the subcommittee who wants to add anything or have any questions. So,
appears to be a well-balanced recommendation. I move that we adopt the recommendation of your work group to approve the combination of option two and option three.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. The next item on our agenda is item number five, children's waiting room distribution.
Slight error that the materials for the children's waiting room distributions are incorrectly labeled as item four. They're pages 57 through 62.
Okay. It's Kim Flinner, Beach Superior Court. Our working group, as you know, was asked to review the children's waiting room distribution items, which were previously, a portion of those were previously put before this committee and subsequently the Judicial Council and adopted, a policy was adopted. However, there were a couple of outstanding items that we were asked to revisit and come up with a recommendation. Continuing our discussions regarding courts that cease operating children's waiting rooms. That also, we were asked to look over a policy or come up with a draft proposal with regard to unspent funds and a cap on those existing CWR restricted fund balances. So I don't know, Judge, if you want to go through
each recommendation separately, or go through the whole thing and then we'll come back? Is that easier for you? Right. That they would be unrestricted and go back to. Okay. Okay. So, for the purposes of the first recommendation and looking at the, again, your materials, you have our, what our current policy is. And after this committee met again, or working group rather, we came up with a new Section C. I know it's difficult, and one of the directives we were trying to accomplish was keeping it simple, which is hard when you're trying to factor in every single possible scenario. So keeping the policy as clear and concise as we could, but still attempting to address everything, the language now reads, in Section C, or rather give specific direction with those courts who cease operating. And the policy recommends that they are, will be, those courts will be required to notify the Judicial Council no less than 60 days. Absent that notification, the distribution will cease as soon as is practicable, and any unspent funds will be returned. I'll just give you a little background on that. The children's waiting room funding that is held locally with those courts in a restricted fund, if those are unspent and this policy is put into place and that money is returned, it becomes unrestricted and goes into the trial court trust fund for distribution or allocation that is unrestricted. As long as it stays with that local court in that restricted fund, it can't be spent for any other purposes. So, as we started looking at some of these programs and looking at these rather large fund balances, I'll just give you a couple of examples. Some courts had in excess of $1 million, while their annual distribution to that fund is under $100,000. That's pretty significant because, again, it can only be spent on children's waiting room. So, that was the point. That was why we were going to try to take a look at that, and we'll start talking about that cap as we get into Section D. So back to Section C, as we talked about the proposal, keeping it as simple as possible, the new proposed language requires the court to notify within that 60-day time frame. In the event they want to continue receiving it, for example, if they have plans to reopen, there is an application process that was already adopted by the council, and that was in Section A. We're not changing that. We're just indicating that the courts would need to continue with that process. Absent that application, again, the funds will, the distribution will stop as soon as it's practicable, and those unspent funds will be returned. The Budget Advisory Committee would make a recommendation once those applications are received, just as we do now for new CWR requests. Our working group has reviewed them. We make a recommendation to this committee, who ultimately makes a recommendation to the council. Reports that apply, whose application is denied by the council, again, any unspent funds would be returned to the TCTF, and again, unrestricted. Any questions on C before I go into D? Okay. So D was with regard to that cap that we talked about. The working group really wanted to discuss, or I'm sorry, put it on the courts to self-police. In other words, if it costs you $50,000 a year to run your program, but you are receiving $100,000 a year through your CWR distribution, you might want to request a reduction to that. All but LA court, all the courts who are currently operating a CWR, except for LA, are at the cap, the max of $5 per filing. LA is still at the $3. And I don't know if you'll recall, a couple months back, San Francisco had just requested to increase theirs, so they are now at $5 as well. Because these fund balances are growing in these courts, just we're looking at it from that 50,000 foot level, it appears that your distribution is higher than, or you're not spending the funds out of there, perhaps you're taking them from somewhere else, leaving those restricted.
So again, that was the first bullet is, in general, court should request a distribution amount that doesn't result in that accumulated fund balance. Effective July 1, 2015, and just for clarification purposes, because again, our working group understood that this is going to take some time to put into place, and in order to do that, we wanted to give, it'll be more than roughly about 15 months that you would have to spend down the restricted monies through CWR costs and expenditures, but beginning for fiscal year July 1, 2015, that means the 15-16 fiscal year, you spend down the money. If by June 30th, 2016, you still have in your fund balance for CWR more than a one-year average distribution, I'm sorry, we went away with the average. We did look at that, didn't we? The one-year actual distribution, it's going to be reduced in your 16-17 fund balance or fund allocation. So, very difficult discussion. I realize that. I understand. But, again, that money that's just sitting there accumulating in those local trusts that can't be spent for any other purpose isn't helping the branch. That's money that could be in the trial court trust fund. So the gist of that cap is explained in Section D. Courts who have just recently requested or request over this next fiscal year, they won't have accumulated 12 months, so this won't apply to them. Courts who have less than 1 year's worth of distribution in their CWR account, this isn't going to apply to you. It's only for those courts, and I'll give you an example. We have a court that annual distribution is $22,000. They have $244,000 in their CWR account. So, looking at that, looking at trying to, again, Judge Earl said this morning, do what's right for the branch as a whole, not the local court. That was our purpose behind recommendation number, or item D. The final one, again, it's a one-time. It's not going to apply beyond this fiscal year. There are only two courts, San Luis Obispo and El Dorado, that fall into this category. But basically, courts that receive distributions, and again, it's those two courts, but did not operate a CWR during this time period, must either apply for a continued distribution no later than April 1 of 2015, or have their distribution stopped as soon as practicable and return to the TCTF any unspent CWR distribution. So again, only two courts. That won't happen again. If the rest of the policy is put into place, we won't have courts that don't operate one for multiple years and just accumulate that fund balance. Any questions?
And for those courts, would that also apply to the accumulated fund balance? Would they have to return that, or they have until the following year? So what happens so they return the distribution, but what happens to their fund balance?
They cease the distribution as soon as practicable, but they would have to return that fund balance through a reduction to their TCTF allocation in July of 2016, or as soon as we receive our 16-17.
Could that be amended to make that clear, to say distributions and fund balance?
So
any,
read the next.
So to have their distribution stopped.
So to return.
And return to the TCTF any unspent CWR distributions.
And fund them. Include inside
the unspent.
Yeah, I think that's the unspent, but certainly we can amend the language if we need to. Any unspent CWR distributions, meaning prior years up through that point, so that is technically the fund balance. Do you want me to change it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, as long as I know that was the intent.
Okay.
Just good.
I don't think I disagree at all with what you're proposing, but I have a very serious concern about the mechanism by which you propose to do it. Indeed. What you say is that if you have a fund balance greater than a cap, then at the end of the fiscal year, you'll have the next year's allocation reduced by the amount above the cap in the subsequent fiscal year. Take your example of the court that has $1 million reserve and $100,000 expenditure. It sounds like what you're saying is that court's going to have its allocation from the TCTF reduced by $800,000 in the subsequent fiscal year. But that court can't spend the fund balance because it's restricted. So what you're going to do is hammer that court and cut it by $800,000 as this is worded. If what you want to do is to sweep the reserves, okay, that's a good policy decision perhaps, but the way you propose to do it would not result in sweeping the reserves. We still have these unspent reserves sitting there, but we have the rest of our allocation reduced, and we'd be cutting staff because we can't spend that reserve from the waiting room.
And so that discussion was had, and the intent behind it is that either, and Stephen, maybe you can help me since we had the conversation, it's an accounting issue, but it is, so it basically, for that particular court, that 220 that was restricted is no longer going to have that restricted, so it's as though that money is being returned. It's not going to be restricted in that account anymore.
That is not what this says, and we're going to make this recommendation, and it needs to be very plain, otherwise we're going to cripple some courts that are already living.
So perhaps modifying the language to say having it taken out of, let me go back to which bullet that is, the third bullet, will have their allocation reduced by the amount above the cap in the subsequent fiscal year, and somehow, Stephen, we talked about it becoming what was in their fund balance is now unrestricted, is used for their general fund. So, not if it's returned. So it's just basically not passing the money back up, and that was what we had that conversation.
So I think the way, another way to do it would be to say, I'm not advocating it, but technically you would reduce the children's waiting room distribution the following year. And it's going to take you, in some cases, it may take a few years to recapture it, but you would recapture that.
That would take 10
inevitably,
years.
You would have to recapture those that excess amount that you're identifying here. I think you may run into a legal problem. What Judge Good's talking about, you can run into a legal problem. You can't change the characterization of those funds that were provided legally restricted for that purpose.
And we did have the conversation as far as sending it to legal before anything, so we have that entire 15 months as we're looking at how that works. Our initial recommendation was to return it and return any unspent funds, so you're unrestricting it. But again,
so maybe I'm missing something, but it seems like the cleanest way to do this is to say to the court, you have $800,000 of CWR that you can't use, send it back to us, and that's the cleanest way, rather than having to recharacterize the money.
That's how we started.
So I think that becomes, from a public transparency perspective, from an accounting perspective, from every other perspective, perhaps the most simple and straightforward way to do this, and I think once this policy is in place, I don't think you're going to get pushback from these courts if they're holding funds that they can't spend and they're restricted. So just send them back, and that would be a cleaner way to do this. Was that idea rejected for some reason?
No, I think it was just part of the discussions of how that worked, but that was the proposal, was that they were going to return the same language that's in item E.
Yeah.
That's the same language we originally had in this item. I don't know if there's any.
Well, but why was it rejected? Why can't they just return it?
I think, as I recall from the conversation, it was more of just efficiency. But I don't think anybody has any objection to making it more clear the mechanics. We were told that from an accounting standpoint, this is kind of what can happen. So.
Rather than
we were concerned, I know at one point we were concerned, what if they don't give it back? And then it was kind of, well, just from an accounting standpoint, then we can do some sort of accounting procedure to do this. But I agree. I think the clarity is very helpful. And I think that we could build in a consequence if you don't return it, that is that you're reduced at that point. But then it's, you control that. The court controls that, not the policy.
So if we modify that bullet to read, courts that have a CWR fund balance greater than the cap as described above at the end of the fiscal year must return any unspent CWR distributions, or must return that amount that's above the cap.
Yep.
I like that better.
Yep.
And then, I guess the question is, once it's returned, do we need legislation to make that an unrestricted balance in the TCTF, or does that go to the TCTF?
It goes back to the TCTF. With my understanding, again, I requested that, and I still think we should run it by legal just to make sure that there isn't any, we're not creating any foul by that money was pulled out, restricted for that government code language, but if we're sending it back up.
I mean, the object clearly is to take those monies and put them back in the TCTF for unrestricted use.
Correct.
I think we need to be very careful to make sure we're doing that legally in a way that accomplishes what you're trying to do and not find out 6 months later that it's not going to happen.
Understanding that the money was originally not restricted in the TCTF until they made their application. So I think that's why. But I agree. I think we need to take a look at it and make sure whatever we do is appropriate and follow the accounting practices.
So I would move that with that slight change, and I don't know how to word it, but I would move that we adopt the proposed children's waiting list to have it done clear. Everybody understands it as Kim outlined in the
There a second to that?
Second.
Second. Any further discussion?
I do.
Yes, sir. Judge Gall.
I'm checking. Indeed. Well, there's three things. So the language, as soon as practicable, can we put a time frame on it? Can we just say 30 days, 50 days, whatever? In D, where it says in general courts should request, I think that should say shall request. And there's no reason not to. And in item 3, I think those courts, considering they've been holding on to that money for 8 years, shall return the money. If they want to do it again, then they can apply. If they can't hold on to the money and then apply, they should have to return it immediately.
You're talking about an E?
Right.
Adult friendly amendment? I'm trying to track your amendment. So the first one was as soon as practicable. Where is that?
It's some at the top of page 58. Was the first bullet, the last, or two. Second to last line, but as soon as practicable there. And I think it was another.
So I think that was a request by finance, because they're the ones that actually have to stop the distribution. And let me just ask either Zlatko or Stephen, if we inserted language that says that the distribution will be stopped within 60 days, does that give finance enough time to do that? Is that your proposal?
Yes.
Strike as soon as practical to read. Within 60 days of notifying the director?
Sure. And I'm pretty sure it says it somewhere else, same language.
There is the as soon as practical.
It's under E on the last page, 59. Again, the second to last sentence.
And so distribution stopped within 60 days. Within 60 days of, will be stopped within 60 days of that April 1st. Of April 1st, so by June 1st, 2015.
Right. And then the second item was item D, right in the middle of page 58. The first bullet says, in general, court should request, I think it should say shall request.
And then there was one more that you had.
The last one had to do with item 3, the J
two courts that have had the money for 8 years. My feeling is they must return it within whatever period of time, and if they want to apply, they just start over.
So it should, instead of and require them to
return the money.
It should say shall return the money or?
No, I wouldn't have or. I would say shall return the money and then.
And start over?
Right, they can apply separately if they want to.
So in the actual item in the policy language, it reads, courts that receive this distribution, didn't operate, must either apply for a distribution or have their distribution stopped. And you're recommending that we take that language out and just have it must return to the TCTF any unspent distribution.
Right. And I guess, I mean, maybe there's a reason why they've been holding on to the money, but that's a lot of money to be holding on to, so I'd say it just goes back. Then they can reapply later if they want to.
Stephen, one second. Back to the judge's recommendation, so I don't have any objection to that because, again, the remainder of the policy, David, Chris, Mary Beth, you were on the committee,
Chris.
Judge Johnson.
All right, good.
So,
I think David had a
question. I know other people want to talk. I'm just trying to track where we are, everybody.
But they're not offering it. Must, and then all the language out. Returned to the TCTF. Did not operate during this time period, must return to the TCTF any unspent DWR distribution.
Period.
Okay.
So the proposed amendment to that last one that Judge Gall suggested, item three, is that these courts that received distributions but did not operate a CWR during that time period shall return any unspent CWR distributions, period.
And
I win.
Yes, you do. Ultimately, you do.
Maybe by, you know, put a date on it or 60 days or whatever.
Within those 60 days, to work consistent. That June 1, just so, since we're striking all of the April 1st language.
By June 1st.
And that's 2015.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And yes, but I think we're making an additional amendment to this third bullet per finances request.
Okay. What's there's another request to amend, which the
in
third bullet under
D. So the policy language, and I'm on attachment 4C, the policy language as we amended it said courts that have a CWR fund balance greater than the cap is described above at the end of the fiscal year instead of having their allocation reduced, we're saying we'll work with
the finance office to return the funds.
We'll work
in an appropriate manner.
Well,
so,
let's back up.
So,
let me back up because this is getting out of hand here. Let me back up. So originally the proposed recommendation to that bullet was that courts that have a CWR fund balance greater than the cap as described above at the end of the fiscal year shall return any amount
above the cap
and strike the language that says we'll have their allocation reduced.
Yes.
Do we need to add anything more to that?
We just work to make that happen.
Right.
So no time frame. Just saying at the end of the fiscal year, they'll work with.
We don't have to put it in here. Okay. And who made the original motion?
I did.
Do you accept these as friendly amendments? And who seconded?
I did, but I,
members, we had a discussion about timing. And the timing is that sometimes you need to have money. Sometimes you have to have the funds in your budget to make a solicitation on RFP to contract for services. And in some instances, you have courts that are in the process of opening a brand new courthouse with a new children's waiting room. And you can't rightfully issue an RFP if you don't have the money to do that. And that may require having the funds in your budget to issue the RFP, and sometimes it takes 90 days. So if you're in between fiscal years, you don't have the money in there and you have to give it back, you may or may not get the money the following year, what do you do with the RFP?
But you wouldn't. That wouldn't be the case because we're saying above a one-year reserve. So there's still, of course, are not going to return one-year reserve that they have. They're returning everything over that.
Gotcha.
So, you're
so the presumption is that the cost will not exceed your one-year allocation. Okay. So with that, I will also second that friendly amendment.
All right. Judge Good?
I have two other technical issues. One, I don't disagree with the intent of what Judge Gall suggested, but with respect to the first bullet, courts shall request the distribution amount and not result in accumulating. As I understand it, this is one of those revenue streams that's a little uncertain. You get a certain amount of money per labor file. So you can't know at the beginning, you can know what your cost is going to be, but you don't know exactly what your income stream is going to be. So I think you need a little wiggle room here because I can't pin my revenues to my expenses. That's number one. Number two, at the end of the it says JC staff to report any allocation reductions. We're not going to have allocation reductions. Which leads me to say this. I actually support what the committee is trying to do here, but I will vote against this motion because I don't know what I'm voting on. And there's a lot of money moving around here and a lot of pieces, and I would like to see the language cleanly presented before I vote on it. And I'd like to know that it's going to work. And I don't have confidence that this is going to work. So respectfully, I'm going to vote against this motion. And I would prefer to see this recommitted to the committee, bring it back to us at our next meeting, let us look at it and make sure it's going to function the way it's intended. As I say, I have no problem with the policy or the intent of it. I just don't think it's fully baked.
Yeah, I don't know, but Thomas Bispo's not here, and then he had to leave early and catch a shuttle. Eldorado, have they had input and talked about what they're going to do? And so, again, if they've been holding it, sure, give it back. We can use it better. But if they're holding it for a specific purpose, what they're going to be doing, that input, I don't know. I'm sure the committee's already addressed that. Maybe.
Spoken with Eldorado, not San Luis Obispo is the more recent one. I know Stephen and finance office have spoken with San Luis Obispo, but I don't know to what extent. Again, so the policy that's in place now that allows courts to apply and apply up to a year in advance if they had programs that were starting under David's scenario, a new port construction project, anticipating that they can make their request to start receiving those funds again. With regard to the language, Judge, in the last bullet in D, that would need to be amended based on the previous friendly amendments. JC staff will report any return of funds to the TCBAC and the Judicial Council. So nothing referencing the allocation reduction. No language in that.
So let me address, first of all, Judge Goods, take that as a friendly amendment to that last bullet. Is there a second on that? Well, we haven't voted on the other. Let's vote on the original one first. The original amendment, proposed amendments that Judge Gall suggested to the language. I'm going to call the question on that. We've had a motion to amend and a second. All in favor of amending the language? Say
aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
And then we now have had a motion to amend the language on item 2D, the last bullet. The motion is Judicial Council staff will report any return of funds to the Budget Advisory Committee and the Judicial Council. Is there a second on that motion to amend that language? I need a second.
Second.
Who's that?
Judge Lee.
Judge Lee. Any further discussion on the motion to amend that language? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No opposed. So, was there original motion?
There was an original motion, second amendment, second another amendment. That I think.
So we're back to moving the recommendation.
Right.
Judge Nash.
Judge Nash.
Congratulations. Stephen Nash.
It's been working.
Can you give him a microphone?
My concern is with what Judge Good was saying. I'd feel better if we had legal and our accounting experts at Judicial Council look at it, make sure. So I'm not opposed to what's being proposed, but I'm not clear that technically it's really been had a thorough go-through. These state funds are set up not only to allocate certain money, but they also are set up to receive certain funds. This is probably okay, but we should have accounting folks look at it. We should have our legal experts look at it, and then come back. Maybe it's approve it today, but then if there's any change that needs to be, you know, made, come back and tell us. But I'm just concerned that, you know, we've kind of put something together here real quick.
So you're asking to, you and Judge Good, I take it, asking to defer action on this item until we provide a clean copy, since there were several amendments to the language, and make sure that legal services offices have been consulted. Is that right?
I'm okay. I'm even okay with approving language as long as there's also direction to have AOC Legal and or Judicial Council Legal Services and Judicial Council Finance Accounting staff look at this and make sure that legally this works, that the appropriate procedure, then I'm okay with it, knowing that that process is going to occur.
And we can do that. We can take the action on the motion today and then do those follow-up steps and report back to you at our next meeting.
Sure.
Is there any further discussion on that then?
Well, what does that mean in terms of making a recommendation? I mean, we're a formal advisory committee, and are we going to make a recommendation to the Judicial Council? Or are we going to wait and see what the view is? Let me do it this way. I'm going to make a motion that we recommit this to committee and that it be brought back here. As I say, I think it was all good policy. I just would like to see it executed properly. And I just think it's sloppy to say we're going to vote on something subject to a review that we're not going to then ourselves review. I think it's my responsibility to make sure something is done right. And I just don't feel comfortable doing it.
I'll second that motion. I have the same concerns. I need to see it come back in clean language. I'm not comfortable approving it subject to the review. I think the review by legal and by accounting has to come first.
So let me call the question on the original motion first then, which is the motion to approve the recommendations as amended. All in favor? Any opposed?
Aye.
All right. And then I'll call the second motion, which is to defer this send this back to the working group to clean up the language as amended, review with legal and finance, and bring it back to this committee at our next meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Perfect. All right. The last agenda item I'm going to defer until our next meeting. So that includes our business meeting today. I want to thank all of you for your patience and for your participation, and our next meeting will be probably in sometime in March. Thank you.
The lines are still active until we hang up, please, so please make note of that.